The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. It's the weekend, it's the podcast, on the weekend of the podcast. Begin with podcast weekend. Peter and Steve are here. Steve's sounding a bit ropey. Went out last night for a meal. Stephen, a meal, food.
I actually drove. I'm not drunk at all.
Oh, you're not. You shouldn't drink and drive, Steve. That is illegal in the UK. But you have just got up. You can tell by your voice. You've got that crackly sort of, you know, voice box hasn't been worked for a couple of hours. Sound, you know.
Well, what time do you get up in the morning on a weekend?
Well, you were a kid, Steve. You know, a lie in for me is like sort of up at six. That's it. And now we're off to, like...
Unlucky for you.
Well, now we're off to Longley to see the animals. I think, why? I've got two animals in the house with me. You know, wild animals. People often say that, don't they? We're not animal. Don't treat me like an animal. We are animals, you fools. Mm. And that's the whole thing about... It's funny how we separate that, you know? Oh, cows and beef, that is. They're animals. We're not. We are animals. We are all animals, you fools. All animals, you know, feel pain, pretty much. You know, sort of, anyway, I don't want to get on to that, but,
okay.
When people say that, you know, it was funny, actually. Well, it wasn't funny, but do you see that thing a couple of weeks back where they're using, containers, shipping containers, they're converting them for people, and they're in Ealing, in London. There's this lady on Sky News, she's a Muslim lady, obviously not from this country, but spoke very good English, but with an accent, you know? And was on Twitter, and Sky put it up there, knowing full well the kind of reaction they'd get, you know? And this lady said, I can't live like this, with my children in this. To be fair, it was converted quite well, because, you know, windows and kitchen, all that, but obviously it's a shipping container. That's the thing, isn't it?
Well, she made it herself.
No, the Ealing Council. No. I came over and make a shipping container. That's a good business, that is, Steve. No, but a couple of them were made. One part of it was a bedroom, one part was a kitchen, but they're stacked on top of each other. But, you know, inside didn't look too bad, you know? But the thing is, it's a shipping container. You ship goods in this. And she said, and she was being housed by Ealing Council. She said, I can't live like this, you know? Me and my three children in here, I live like animals, you know? And she had a, you know, head scarf on.
Where was she from with that accent?
I think she's from Scotland.
Right.
But she's from Ealing. And you can guess what the comments were below, can't you? You know, well, go home then. You know, it's better than living in a tent, isn't it? Somewhere in a refugee camp. But Sky knew exactly what they were doing. It's almost like throwing a bit of petrol on the fire there, wasn't it? But to be honest, to be fair, my thing is this. If you come from a country where it's war-torn and you're put into that environment... I mean, okay, it's shipping container, but that, you'd be thankful, really, wouldn't you, if you come from a war-torn area where, you know, life is at threat. And listen, I just spent, you know, a couple of days in camping. I know what it's like. So I prefer
exactly what it's like, yeah.
I paid for that privilege. I prefer a shipping container to just camping, to be honest. I would. Anyway.
And there you can see why you're a Brexiteer. Absolutely. There we are. Right. Let's move on.
Do you know what? Let's just talk about Brexit for a couple of seconds, right?
No,
this is my thought on it. I don't care now. I don't care what we do. I just think we need to get it done. I mean, I would prefer to Brexit, yes. I would sit on that fence. So I don't think we should be paying lots of money into Europe. And I hate the way Europe has been federalised by these people. There's a hierarchy of leadership that I'm not comfortable with in Europe. They're telling us what to do. I don't enjoy that. And I don't think it's... Now, I'd prefer to have a clean break and do our own deals as a country. I'd prefer that, right? But we have to move on. And I'm not sure what Boris has done is right or wrong, but... I think it has to be moved on. And the thing is genuinely the uncertainty is paralysing business. Business investment has gone down, everything has gone down because we're not moving on in either way. So whatever we do, we have to get on. Even if we remain, I know people will be up in arms because democracy, it's 17.4 million voted to leave, but we have to move on. That's the thing. It's a very good show actually in the mornings, too early for you, Steve, but Wake Up to Money on Radio 5 Live. And there's so many businesses come on there and, you know, they voted leave or remain, all that stuff. But they're all saying, we don't care. We can make decisions based on a decision. You know, if we know we're leaving without a deal, we can plan for that. If we're leaving with a deal, fine, we can plan for that. If we're remaining, we don't have to plan so much. That's where we are. But at the moment, we're in no man's land. We can't plan for anything. We don't know what's going on. And that's the problem. That's why we're just not doing anything. We're not investing. And that's what's killing the economy. So it's that paralysis of business, that uncertainty, you know? That's the thing. So we have to move on. So someone has to move this on. And I think, you know, what Boris has done is a bit of a bold move. It's, oh, hang on, you've got to obey democracy. That's ironic, though, isn't it, people saying that? I've seen people with placards saying, you've got to, this is not democratic. And they went, hang on, the referendum was democratic, though. And MPs forwarding it. And MPs, no, this is the MPs that should represent their constituents who voted to leave, but not. They are voting to remain. That's wrong. That is wrong.
It's a very
You are a representative
situation.
Of your constituents. That's all you are.
But the biggest problem I have with the situation as has evolved this week is that, you know, we've got a Prime Minister that hasn't really been elected by the public.
But you could say that by European Council.
That's a much bigger
upper echelons.
That's a whole different thing. And you've got a kiddie giving the keys to the sweet shop, and he's just then, you know, ruling the roost and doing whatever he wants.
Do you know what? Part of me love the boldness of it. Honestly. A leader will be hated and liked. What you don't want is like Theresa May becoming bland, you know, does no wishy-washy, trying to get anything. And this, I quite like the just coming in, bit of personality, having a crack at it. He'll be hated.
Yes, I am all for strong leadership. I think that's what it's near. I'm just slightly concerned when the leader is a Boris or a Trump or, you know, because they're just a bit unpredictable, and it is a bit concerning, isn't it?
Well, let's be honest, we prefer a Boris over a Trump a million times.
That sounds wrong.
Well,
anyway,
some say they're similar, but I think
we do need to move on.
Yeah.
But it's a bit of a worry the way it's
The thing is, we know Brexit is very divisive. Either way it goes, everyone's not going to be happy with the result. And we know that. In fact, look at that. The referendum itself, let's be honest, okay, there was a slight majority to leave, but that's pretty much half the country didn't want to leave. So whatever happens, you're not going to please all. You know, it's never going to happen. But I would say this. Those people that stand outside the House of Parliament with placards, they're unhinged. They are the edges of society. And in fact, there's a degree of, you know, mental stability. They're right on the outer limits of that. I think they're very questionable. Most of those could probably be certified. And I think you could probably put them away. And I think it's probably safer for the country if you do put them away, because they don't represent the majority. Actually, the Remainers shouting their heads off and going, actually not talking, just shouting. You see, these people, if they didn't have a flag wrapped around them or Remain on them, you would think this guy needs to be put away, something wrong with him. You know, that's what they are outside the House of Parliament. Absolutely. You know.
Yeah, but I just think I stand by that 3 years down the line now from when the vote was, things are a lot clearer in terms of what Brexit actually means. I think not a referendum, but a vote across all of the different options would be the most democratic thing to do. But, you know, it's not going in that direction, and I have to accept that now. But
listen, if you did have another vote now, all right, and I say slightly people went to Remain, there'd be uproar. Because, you know, it's like, if you vote, listen, for a party, a Conservative Party, and the Conservative Party for a general election, and they don't get in, right? You know, you can say, you know, 2 years on the line, I didn't vote for the, 3 years on the line, I didn't vote for Conservative, the Labour, and they're still in. I can't believe this. But that's the way it happens. Things move on.
That's not what the situation is. The situation is that people were voting for something they didn't really understand, and the people like you guys in your Sky News article, those kind of people that, you know, have very deep-rooted ideology.
hang on. You intimated that Brexiteers are some racist, and they're not. Genuinely not.
Not universally, but there is a large.
No, there's a lot. There's probably a proportion. There's a proportion of Remainers that are racist as well, and, and in fact, insane.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But when I said about a lady who would be housing that. Let me just say.
I was arguing with you about this, I'm just thinking. Wait, my point was that people were voting for very niche little parts of things that they kind of wanted to see, like be it immigration or whatever, or for you it's more of a business thing, it's about trade deals or whatever, whereas now it's all a bit clearer what kind of Brexit will entail, so a vote across all the different
let me just say one thing. What's not clear though is people are muddying the waters, and there's this fear campaign that we're going to fall off a cliff, crash out, that is not the case. And I think people are, you know, scheming. It's like, do you know what? That just then, that lady, for example, right, who was complaining about the shipping containers, and you said, oh, you're a Brexiteer. No, I genuinely think, I mean, okay, it's a temporary situation she's in. She's not happy with it. understand that. No one would be here in a shipping container. It looks like a nice... Listen, it was done up quite well. The thing is, it's a shipping container, right? Now, compared to where she was from, I think it's amazing that... And part of me thinks, I love the fact that our country is so free that people can complain about the system and whinge about it, you know, where it's in many countries, you wouldn't be able to do that. You know, so people come over here to whinge about our system, fine. But you know what? You should be thankful for the freedom you have in this country, because that's the way we are. We're open and free.
But we should get our marketing better to those war-torn countries to kind of go, you know, if you think it's this promised land over here, you'll be living in a shipping container. But if you still want to come, then fair enough.
Let me just say one thing, though, right? Britain's ingenuity and entrepreneurship is almost second to none, honestly, in the world. And we underestimate ourselves. I mean, compared to most other countries in the Europe, we are almost head and shoulders of what we our achievements. We can stand on our own 2 feet. And this is the thing, is this assumption that we need to be in Europe. We don't. Look around the economies of Europe. They're in trouble. We are one of the best performing economies. And I mean, we should not have to be, we're so scared about everything. We will do just fine.
Yeah, for me, it's not that. I'm just more like, let's just chill out. Everyone just live and let live.
I'm going to draw a line under this and do Jerry's final thought on this matter. Yeah. I think go, Steve. Forever. Do you not think there's a little bit of like backwards play in this, that they're just doing this whole Farage thing just to kind of make it look like we're going to just leave with no deal, and it's just going to last minute on the, what, I can't remember the date now, they're just going to do a deal because they actually believe that Boris is crazy enough to just go, yeah, we're going
to
leave.
No, but Steve, I think we have to prepare to leave, and that's the thing. It's almost like when you're on holiday somewhere and you go into these shops that are set of tourist shops and you can bargain and barter with them, you have to be prepared to walk away. You have to put your deal on the table and walk away and say, don't worry, I'll go somewhere else, fine. And then the guy will go, okay, listen. But if he knows you're not going to walk away, he will say, no, that's all we got. There's only one shop in the town, you know, you can't angle with him so much. So don't worry. There's a bigger world out there we'll trade with.
But I have got a plan to leave. But yeah, I think a lot of this, a lot of what's going on, I think is a big part show to this, to basically say to the EU that, yeah, we are going to leave. And if, you know, that's the final deal will kind of probably be all right, actually.
Okay, I've only got half an hour because I've got a long leet.
Let's finish on that.
What a waste of time the last 3 years has been, and there we are.
And in fact, the last 15 minutes. Do you know what? I did say it on Twitter. He says, "Don't worry about Boris, proroguing Parliament, all that." And then when it comes down to it, I think the Brexit situation will be solved by two strangers arguing on Twitter. Because let's be honest, it's not about that. People are arguing non-stop on Twitter about it. You know, thinking you're not going to get anything solved by doing this. You're just wasting your time and energy. Put it into. You can't change that. You know, have the wisdom to concentrate on things you can change. Don't worry about things you can't deal with. Like I said, you can buy stocks and shares. As an investor, what we should be saying is, how can I prepare for this as an investor? You know, and I think, you know, what are we even doing sort of much? Like I said, a recession is coming. We know that. It pretty much is. I mean, it's odds on. I mean, look at this. There's a little thing that came out recently where it's a guy. So this guy's called David Rosenberg. He's an economics guy. He said, we have now 3 months of a 3-month 10-year yield curve inversion. The track record this has had in predicting recessions is 100%. All right? Now, the average time it takes for that to play out is around about 18 months. So we're talking about the back end of 2020. A recession, you know, you're not going to know a bit of difference. It's technically 2 quarters of contracted growth, you know, or not non-growth, contraction in GDP. That's what it is. Now, you won't notice a big difference. Maybe the stock markets have a bit of shock because global growth slowed down, but it'll soon bounce out of it, and recessions don't last that long. Now, you need to be prepared to have a bit of cash on the side to take advantage, because you can earn decent money out of a recession. You know, the bounce out of a recession is very good. And so that's all, you know, but... What you want to do as well, when the global markets are, you know, slowing and everything's crawling down and share prices are going down and grinding lower and lower and lower, how can you insulate your portfolio against this grind lower? And like I said, I've highlighted recently in a couple of ways to do it. Gold. There's gold in individual companies, you know, miners, explorers. Okay, so is that doing well at the moment? I've not seen it recently.
It's pulled back a bit, but it's also probably, I'm not sure about you, Pete, but I'm still down on that from when invested.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen.
Seen a nice rise recently.
It's had a breather. The RSI is coming off. It's the same. Yeah. Do you know what? Like I said, it's an exaggerated move of gold itself. Gold has had a little breather. What's going to happen, I believe, is this, right? I believe we'll have a rally now. Equities will be better. We're into September. We're out of, September's generally not a good month anyway. It's like the last couple of months, November, December, good. October's very volatile. But I think, because we've had a big sell-off in August, I think September will be a lot better. And we're starting to see the starts of a rally now. And I think as equities play out and get more bullish, people, then gold will pull back a bit. People forget about recession. That's the time to be accumulating gold. You know, when people are not talking about it, when the share price comes down, we've seen gold rally a little bit. But I think when gold really comes off a bit, that's the time to start, you know, buying some more of that ETF. And then we'll start realising global growth. Well, these are the signs, I think, of global growth slowing down from GDPs. Lower GDPs coming out next year. And then people say, oh, hang on. And then I think gold will start rallying again. But I'm waiting for gold to come back. I really am, because I think it will. I mean, Bitcoin as well. I think Bitcoin's a good play. It wasn't just come back a bit, hasn't it? Have you had a look at Argo? Have you been into that? Have you had that? I think that's
cool. No, I didn't get into it. Has it come right back to where you?
No, it's not. I talked about it, I think, at about six, and it's got up to about eight. Is it about eight now? 8.6 pence. It's come back a little bit. I'd look at that because the Bitcoin price is leveraged to that, and that came back. That fell like 5% the other day in half an hour, and I think what? Wow. And that's for a big sort of market cap. That's a lot, 5% in. So it's highly leveraged to that, you know. But it's very clever, the Bitcoin thing. I didn't realise this. This is very clever. So, what's it called? The founders? So good. Nagasoshi. No.
Yeah. Katawachi.
Founder? No.
Koshi.
Bitcoin. I can't remember his name. Satoshi Nakamoto. So, first of all, it starts with Satoshi Nakamoto. Didn't know who he is, actually.
No.
But it's a very clever thing.
It's Steve.
Yeah, so first of all, it's been designed to be anti-inflationary. There's only 21 million Bitcoin ever going to be in existence, right? Unlike central banks, they can print more money. Obviously, that devalues the currency. And so when that happens, that's why you go to assets like gold and Bitcoin, because there is a finite amount of supply. And they give rewards to miners. So basically, you have to create these blockchains, right? A block is completed every 10 minutes, pretty much. But the more people that start mining, the harder it's to solve these sort of difficult sort of solutions, these equations. If you solve it, you get rewarded 12.5 Bitcoin. That used to be a lot more. Every few years, or I don't know how many years, they halve that. So when you first started, it used to be 50 Bitcoin you used to be rewarded with. If you create a block or solve this equation, and then the block is created, you're rewarded with Bitcoin, right? But this goes down every few years. Mm. And also, the more people trying, the harder the equation gets to solve. So it makes sure that a block is only created, a blockchain, part of the blockchain is only created every 10 minutes. But there's 16.8 million Bitcoin out there already, but it'll get harder to mine them as time goes on. And so you've got these companies now, but it can be massively profitable. So you've got to be the biggest and best and more importantly, the lowest cost sort of miner out there. And Argo is one of those. They've got about 13,000 ant miners, these little Bitcoin machines, computers, just in this warehouse in Quebec, just mining nonstop. In July, they did 163 Bitcoin, which was worth £1.36 million. But obviously, as the price goes down, right, less people will mine, because depending on your level of profitability. But what's it called? Argo, their profitability is about $2,000 Bitcoin. So they're very low. Most people, a lot, double that. So if the share price goes down, they keep mining that. You know, they keep mining profitably. And, of course, because it's a finite amount of resource of Bitcoin, the price will go back up. And they'll have all this Bitcoin. So it's very clever. It's very clever way of doing it. And no one knows who he is. Satoshi Nakamoto. It's amazing, isn't it? That's
very clever. You say because it's a finite resource, effectively, the price will go up. Yes, but equally, there is still that uncertainty around cryptocurrency, isn't there, in terms of actually becoming a viable currency that's going to be, you know, a long-term solution because of the way it can be used for, negative. What's the word?
Do you not think it's just very complicated? And even I, who's quite technical, just like what you were just saying then, just like it does go over my head a little bit. So the average person isn't even going to even look at this for a long, long time.
The average person doesn't need to mine.
Exactly. The average person doesn't need to know that at all. All they need to know is that it's now a store of value, Steve. It's like gold, you know? When gold prices go down, you know, generally there's quite a few, you know, explorers, producers who can't be profitable. So sometimes they even sometimes they even mothball their mines. So what happens there then? So less supply comes onto the market. So that drives the price up because there are people trying to buy gold. You know, the Chinese and massive markets now in China and India trying to buy gold. But the supply goes down. So supply and demand. It's very clever. It's just basic economics. All you need to know is supply and demand, and then that's all it is.
But my point is that just the long-term value of these cryptocurrencies, because of the negative side, i.e. they can't be traced and all the rest of it, they can be used for criminal activity, whatever.
But the thing is, if you think about it...
How is that going to be regulated?
No, if you think about it, it's more traceable, because when a transaction is done in Bitcoin, there are about, I don't know how many people, but there are multiple ledger holders. Everyone does... If you're part of a ledger base, so you all have to sort of agree a transaction is taking place at a certain time, certain date, for a certain amount. Not just one bank. So it's lots of different people. So they say it's safer, really. But I genuinely think, if you notice, since Bitcoin's had its spike back a while back, there have been so many more big companies now. I mean, big banks starting up their own cryptocurrency. In fact, Facebook are doing it, JP Morgan are doing it.
It validates
the technology. But I think the lead dog, Bitcoin, which is there from the start, I think that will always pretty much be up there. There'll be cryptocurrencies come and go.
But you just don't know. Because it's so new, it's still around 10 years or whatever, but it's
yes,
still
but let me say one thing. Argo Mining don't just mine Bitcoin. So whenever another cryptocurrency becomes popular, they start doing that as well. So they're very flexible. Let's move on. Bidstack. Good news from Bidstack. I did say on Twitter, you know, like your postman, James is delivering now, isn't he? They're now on Trade Desk. Let's look down the news there. So Trade Desk is a big demand-side programmatic platform. And so in the last few days, right, they've done a contract with Trade Desk. It's a collaboration with Epic Games, Unreal Engine. They've done a collaboration as well with AppNexus, another DSP. They're doing all they need to do. They acquired PubGuard. They're doing all they need to do. Funny enough, the share price isn't rising. And now, I've said this, we've seen the share price rise quickly. The fast move probably would have happened. Doesn't mean you won't get a good return from a Bidstack over the next 5-10 years. Of course you can. But of course, as the market cap goes up, shares move more slowly. But if you're looking at... This is the way to look at it. If you want to outperform the stock market, right? The stock market generally is about 7 to 9% over years, or the S&P in America is 500, is about 7 to 9% over years, right? If you want to outperform that, then you have to go, you know, stock selecting. And I think you can be pretty much safe. If you buy a Bidstack now on lows, I think over the next few years, you can say you'll get a good return from that. You'll outperform the stock market. And I think, you know, the market cap is still about, what is it at the moment? 75 million. But I genuinely believe it'll catch up to that in a couple of years' time, that the fundamentals, you know, the way they go at the moment, I just think the fundamentals will catch up that no problem at all. And then you're sort of buying growth, because if they beat their end-of-year targets, their financial targets, you watch it start a motor, because they're going, hang on a sec, this is a massively growing company. Cause that's all it's about, growth. You know, when you're a company in this area, who's a pioneer in an area, such a hot sector, that is growing quickly, it's like, you know, in fact, look at Trade Desk. I mean, grew massively. And, of course, it's highly valued because the growth is phenomenal. So you just buy growth, you know where it could go. And then when you've got a company like burning a trail like that, you know, it could be taken out by another company. Wow, the growth in this company is phenomenal. Like I said, Right Move and Asos? You know, there's companies that... Asos, most successful company on AIM, you know? People called that overvalued all the way up. But the people who did that missed out on putting a grand in and receiving 165 grand back for a return. That's nice, isn't it? For a grand in, 165 grand back, your return would have been. Now, that's the kind of growth, you know, that people missed out on because they kept saying, oh, it's overvalued. So you can, of course, it's the argument, you're saying it is highly valued, but do you know what? You can miss out on some cracking... Like I said, there's that guy, one of the Motley Fool brothers, that's all he does is buy those kind of companies that have massive growth but are overvalued. Because, do you know what? Everyone's like, oh, they're overvalued. But they go on to become superstars. And that's it. So, you know, never jump out completely. If you, I don't value this at all, because you could be missing out on the next supermarket star, you know, superstar.
Supermarket?
Yes, stock market supermarket star. Yeah, stock market superstar, I meant to say, not supermarket star.
Supermarket sweep.
Stock market superstar. Say that three times quickly.
Stock market superstar. Stock market superstar. Stock market superstar. There you go, done.
Steve, have a go.
Stock market superstar. Stock market superstar. Stock market superstar.
Yeah! Okay.
Stock market.
Yeah. Other companies, Emotion, I think, is on, you know, it's a good deal here. The guys are going well. It's a very good business. I think they'll surprise people with the news, I think. This is a good, these guys know how to do business. You know, they put money in. I think it'll do very well. Immersive experiences. Itaconix, did you look at Itaconix? It's down again now. Itaconix is now 6.5 million, 6.3 million. It's going to be, looks like, a self-sustaining business now. I mean, they may go back to the market once, but that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for companies that will not have to go back to the market over and over again, because it's going to get increasingly hard over the next year to do that. There'll be bigger discounts. You know, they're raising less money because they can't get much away, and it'll generally be with, you know, private investors who will flip the stock as fast as they can. So you'll have downward pressure on the share price from that discount, you know, dilution and flippers. So what are you looking for? I'm looking for is businesses that are self-sustaining, they have cash and they're growing.
The one that I'm focused on at the moment is Polarian, because I've invested in that a while back, and also we were all waiting for the phase 3 results, and it had that kind of really strong rise, as these kind of stocks do. We haven't heard any news, but the price has come right back.
There hasn't been
any news. They're not doing any kind of promotion or anything, there's no, they're just waiting for the results, I suppose, are we?
Look at the chart now, yes. Do you know what? Opportunity there. Are you in that, Steve?
I am, but do you remember I missed on that spike just before? I think the day before I was talking about putting some more in, and I missed it in that spike. So it's almost back to where it was. So actually, I might put a bit more in now.
Yeah, so now, listen, I mean, I did say on Twitter, I said sometimes, you know, when there's a big seller, you know, in a stock that you hold, it's either frustrating or an opportunity. Depends how maxed out you are on that stock. If you're overexposed or you're fully exposed and the seller starts coming in, it's annoying. But, like I said, if you've always scaled in, always be conservative about scaling in. One of my biggest faults is going in too big, too quick when it's risen a little bit already. Now, I don't mind doing that when it's not risen and people are not talking about it. But, like I said, always keep your gunpowder dry. I don't know what that means, really. Why you should wet the gunpowder? No. Who's wetting the gunpowder? I don't know why we do that. Yeah, I'm just wetting the gunpowder, sir. Why do that for, though? What do you do that for? We're never going to win this battle if you keep wetting the gunpowder. But, yeah, keep it, you know, what I'm saying is, always keep a bit, you know, so, yeah, always keep a bit in reserve. You know, like I said, scale in. I mean, I don't know, three tranches I've normally used, or three or four tranches. And you know, and then maximum exposure 10% pretty much of the entire portfolio. But if you do that now, it's like, we know Amphion is their biggest shareholder. They like Polarian, but they got a massive loan. If they don't pay off the loan, they're going to go through. So they have to sell some stock to keep afloat, pretty much.
What are they down to now in terms of percentage holding of the company?
They're still about 13, 14%, or even higher than that, 15%. So look, so they're going to be selling. That is an opportunity. I mean, like you did say, it's how confident we are, Pete, on this phase 3.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's one of the most lowest risks phase 3s I've ever seen. So it's the biggest risk about phase 3 trials is the unpredictability on the way drugs react on different humans. You can try one drug on 10 humans, get 10 different reactions. The majority of them can be negative. That's the problem. With this phase 3, it's completely different. All they're doing is, They've got to do a phase 3, because it's called a drug device. There's xenon gas used in the device, which is a very stable gas. It's not harmful. We breathe it in. But because of that, we've got to use it, because it's treated like a drug. They've got to do a phase 3 and pass it.
Yeah.
But essentially, it's their machine up against a 40-year-old technology that's being used currently. The 40-year-old technology is harmful. It's radioactive. And it only produces 2D low-res images. Their machine is being used already now in research. Okay, so it's not harmful. And it produces 3D high-resolution images. They already done their own phase 3 a while back, and it passed quite easily. So now they're doing an independent phase 3, and the vague confidence. The fact that, I say, you know, Amphion still 16%, apparently, a bit less, maybe. But the fact that, you know, Richard just chucked in another, was it 80 grand? just on the thing, 80 grand, and you know, the guys there.
It's a classic example of, like, when it was 20p, I bought in, and then it had that meteoric rise up to 30, and you're like, oh, I should have put more in. And nothing's changed. The same thing, we're still waiting for that result. We're still, there's no other news to negatively affect anything. It's now come back to 20p, but the psychology, isn't it, of like, now it's back to where I bought before, so now I should, this is the opportunity to put more in.
This
is what I should be doing, because nothing's changed, because I still... It's the same story.
This is exactly what I've been waiting for.
That's the stock market, you see.
I know.
Buy low, sell high. But it's, do you know what? It's amazing how hard it is to do that. We all have heard that. Buy low, sell high. Because do you know what? When everything's going up, it's the herd mentality. It's crowd mentality. So when everyone's shouting one thing.
When it's at 30p, like, oh, I should have put more in at 20p. Now it's back at 20p. Nothing's changed. So here's my opportunity. Yeah. I haven't clicked the buy button yet. But I should.
Do you know what? My brother only contacts me about shares when he sees them on some kind of board or on Fox's front page when they're hot. Yeah. I said, that's the wrong time to get into when they're hot. You should get into when they're cold, when no one's talking about them. You know, so that's the thing. Buy low, sell high. So now it's coming out. When share price is going down, you see on Twitter, no one's talking about it because share price is going down. That's the time you need to be getting in if you've done research. When it's going up, everyone's talking about it. And of course, you go with momentum. So people promote a company that's being promoted by it because it's rising quickly, and that's the way it works, you know? But that's the way. Hello, Mark.
When is the phase three?
So they'll have enrollment complete for the patients undertaking the phase three before the end of September. And then within 4 weeks, they'll have the results out of phase three, which is quite hilarious. Can I help you, Monty? My younger son's saying, can I help you?
We're nearly ready.
We're nearly ready. Okay. We're nearly ready to go to Longleat. So I've got animals in the car, and we're driving around to see animals outside the car. Yeah. So we are sort of normally it's the other way around, isn't it? The animals are locked into somewhere. Yeah. So, to be honest.
I'm sure the animals are looking forward to you coming.
I'm going to go. But one thing is, do you see weigh education worth, again, on weakness, weigh education? I just said on a recent video, I said, how many companies, right? First of all, they said up trading update exceeded expectations of revenue. They're now going to turn over 6 million this year. They're valued at, valued at 15 million. It's gone up recently, last 3 days, exceeded the average. But they got about 5 million in cash. They've got 6 million revenue. They're profitable. They're cash generative. They're going to continue growing. Their growth was 43% year-on-year revenue. They're going to continue that. The market's massive. Jackie came on. Let me say one thing. There are 60,000 homeschool students in the UK. That's increasing by a quarter every year. Even if Wei get 1% of that, it's significant to their revenue. And they are the leading player in this country. So it's a growing market. I'm surprised. And the government now, realising the demand is so big, the government going to have to regulate it. And Wei have been making sure, like Bidstack has, you know, within gaming, that they're a trusted source. So I think, Jackie said in the podcast, something's coming out soon from the government. And I think that will help Wei a lot. Because the growth is massive in this area. You know?
Yeah.
Another one, undervalued, you know, Safe Stay. It's a business that is self-sustaining. It's got cash, cash generative, they're expanding, and yet we've had a seller in. They've had no news. The share price is coming down. It's so frustrating. It's my worst performing stock at the moment, but it's so frustrating because I know it can do very well. I know it will do very well. And Open Orphan, no news. You know, this company's there. They'll do very well.
I'll come back.
Really annoying, but okay, I better go to Longleat. Any other things quickly? I've got to go because I see the monkeys.
No, I think that's it.
Yeah, go see the monkeys. That's all.
Yeah,
monkeys.
Enjoy. Yeah. Okay.
All right, have you been there before?
I have, yeah.
Any good?
Just, the monkeys will be all over your car and rip stuff off it. You'll love it.
You
get a choice though, isn't there, like a two-way bit where you can go in the monkey zone or not go in the monkey zone? I think I chose not to.
You chose not to? Steve, we go there every year. Listen, that's the most exciting part, the monkeys. You literally, there's something wrong though with their bums. They haven't evolved. I mean, as long as evolution stopped at their waist. Because their big red bums there haven't been finished off by whoever finishes them off.
The monkey
bum finishing factory, then this guy is taking a day off somewhere. He needs to. They really looks. Either that or they need to buy softer tissue. Because I think what they're using is really rubbing them a bit raw, you know?
Yeah, I just think they buy their bums.
Oh, who's buying them? They're not using Andrex. I know that.
No.
They're using sandpaper or something. I mean, they're like that. But it looks very sore down there. It's the kind of thing you would not want to wipe your bum after, you know.
Take some old Sudocrem or whatever and hand it out to them. out the window.
I think apply it. I'm not going to apply it on the monkey's butt.
Or do that, I don't know. Yeah, have you got a panoramic sunroof?
You imagine being dragged out of Longleat by the guards and we caught this guy trying to put the cream on the monkey's bums.
We got another bum rubber.
On that high-class note, have a nice weekend, guys. Speak soon.
Yes, enjoy.
Bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.